Good Saturday. It is Saturday. This is a show. Let's put that together. It's the Saturday show. Earlier in the week, Thursday, in fact, I did a spiel. Just wanted to do a spiel, performed a spiel. It had a little bit of a hiss on it, a buzz to it. Yes, it got a lot of attention. Tita Brown wanted to commission the work, but it also had a little bit of a buzz on it. And so we wanted to correct that in a nice sounding spiel. And it concerned what I did on my March vacation. Of concern was a certain Broadway musical, which brings me to the interview that I did on June 9th of 2016 with a cast member of the then Broadway production of Fiddler on the Roof. Michael Bernardi was my guest, and his father, Herschel Bernardi, played Tevye, the third person ever to play Tevye in Fiddler on the Roof. And Bernardi subs for Tevye. He is the understudy for Tevye, or was, in that Broadway production of Fiddler on the Roof. He spends all day on stage. Don't worry. It's not like he was just waiting in the wings, hoping for the call to contemplate becoming a rich man. He plays Mordka the innkeeper. Excellent. I believe they do the bottle dance in Mordka's inn. So this is a very nice conversation. I don't talk a lot of Broadway, but when I do, I make sure to get the understudies with famous fathers. But I love this guy, and it was a good conversation about Fiddler on the Roof. And this is a buzz-free spiel about similar topics. A lot of times when you hear about VPNs, I find that they just assume you know what they are, or even if you have an understanding, oh, they're a virtual private network, you might not know the acronym, but in general, don't they mask what you do online? Why do I need that? People don't explain it correctly, and it was explained to me when I got into the beneficial aspects of Surfshark. So a VPN does mask what you do online, and that's really important for some people who, might be trying to be a dissident in an oppressive regime. It's also just important in terms of general hygiene for why do you have to let every advertiser and everyone else know where you were and, you know, follow your tracks. But I find it's also very practical. Like I said, it's a mask. And so a mask does hide identity, but a mask, a well-fitted N95 mask, also might protect you, which is what a VPN does too. Practically, however, in my life, there are many websites that when I'm traveling, I can't access. I have and pay for access to them. Then I find myself in as far-flung a place as Canada. Sometimes, as an American, a foreign version of, say, Netflix would come in handy. I'd like to watch some of those shows, and I'm not just talking about Czechoslovak soap operas. I'm talking about how the excellent movies move in and out of the different Netflix in different localities. With a really good VPN like Surfshark, you could access all of them. And another big one for me is there is a major broadcaster in Britain. It is a broadcasting company there, but they don't let me hear all the stuff that someone there can hear. With a VPN, I could listen to that as if I were there. There are so many practical uses, plus the traditional use of why let them know exactly what you're doing. Your surfing is for you. A VPN allows you to surf what you want to surf, where you want to surf, without interference from, let's say, repressive governments or the Czech Netflix regime. Get Surfshark VPN at surfshark.deals/gist. What are those deals? Well, enter promo code GIST for 3 extra months for free. You heard me right. 3 extra months for free. That's surfshark.deals/gist. The production of Fiddler on the Roof that's currently on Broadway starring Danny Burstein is great. It's amazing. He's amazing. Awesome show. But it brings to mind several questions and resonances that maybe past productions didn't, because it's book ended by, you see, a current Jewish person. It's actually Burstein without a skull cap and a parka in the beginning of the show. And then you see the same person at the end of the show. And I think the question it raises is questions of inheritance and questions of generations. So aside from the great singing and dancing and plotting, it raises some more meta questions. Now, joining me now is Michael Bernardi. He plays Mortka, the innkeeper. And if you want to talk about generations and inheritances, this is the guy to do it. With his dad was Tevye for years and years on Broadway. His dad, Herschel Bernardi, was one of these great actors in the, well, his acting career was a long time, but in the 70s, he was in a lot of TV shows. Michael Bernardi crushes it as Mortka, and he's here right now. Hey, Michael.
Hi there.
So, your dad died when you were really, really young.
Right? Yeah, I was about a year and a half.
Do you have any actual you can't have, I think there's something called infantile amnesia, and it means that probably physically you can't have formed actual memories of them.
You know, I choose to have one.
Okay.
And there is some scientific evidence to to point that it's possible. But his smell, my mother, she kept his costume. And, of course, just different articles
of
clothing. Yeah.
That was the one he kept. That was the most important role to him?
Absolutely.
Oh, wow.
That's what defined him in so many ways. And that costume, every once in a while, my mom would take it out and she'd smell it. And I remember at an early age kind of ruffling through those boxes and not really knowing who it belonged to. But I would take certain articles and put it up to my nose and go, "That's Papa."
Yeah.
And my mom would go, "Yep, that's Papa." That I feel like that's what I remember. And maybe he used to put me on his knee before I could even sit up and pluck out notes on a piano. And I think I remember a little blurry kind of thing about that. But ultimately, the rest has been puzzle pieces that I've been putting together my whole life.
So of the triple threat that the actor, the Broadway actor should be, rank your singing, dancing, and acting.
Well, me?
For you, yes, yes.
I grew up on the West Coast, mm-hmm. right? And so it's always been acting is the first thing.
Comedy, you know? Right?
Well, yeah, I was a stand-up comedian by the time I was 9 years old, and I don't know how much of a common experience that is growing up in L.A., but it's something that I kind of fell into. I fell into performing, and I fell, you know, the love of applause and getting those laughs and performing. And so, yeah, acting has always been the number one thing for me. And singing has kind of come naturally, you know, not to toot my own horn, but I toot my horn.
Or pluck your own notes on the piano. Of sure. course, when you grew up in that environment, it helps.
I mean, what's interesting is that a lot of that environment kind of dissipated because mm-hmm. My father passed away when so young. He was the baby of the family. And so he came, he had about four brothers, and they were all in the Yiddish theater. The entire Bernardi family grew up in the Yiddish theater. My grandfather was an actor. My grandmother was an actor. And they did the stories of Shalom Aleichem, which Fiddler's based on.
Yeah.
And so, you know, for three generations, us Bernardis have been dressing up like milkmen and yentas, and it's an incredible legacy to be
a
part of.
It's good that you had the theater to do that, and it wasn't some extensive weirdo familial cosplay game. So,
isn't that what it is?
Yeah. Really? Now we have a word for it. By the way, Bernardi, is that a Jewish name, or is that a changed name from
It's a changed name from my grandfather. The original name was Topf, T-O-P-F. And he was an actor and in Eastern Europe. And Topf, when translated, means pot, like pot in a kettle. And the kids would write on the marquee, Pishtopf, which means piss pot. And, you know, kids having fun. I've heard he's absolutely fantastic, actually. And basically, the manager of the theater said, "Hey, you know, pay for the sign or change your name." And Harry Houdini, I think, was really popular at the time. So his first name was Beryl. He knew he was moving to the United States. He wanted to change it to Bernard. And so he kind of went by Bernard Bernardi for a while, then Beryl Bernardi, and trying to probably assimilate as Italian, and they looked at him and said, "No, you're Jewish, obviously."
Houdini, also another famous Jew with a vowel last name.
There you go.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So do you get cast as Italian? By the way, all Jews and Italians, there's a lot of intercasting. I've talked to Paul Giamatti about
this. No question.
Paul Giamatti, who's, I think, half Italian, says he has played 90% of the identified ethnicities he's played has been Jewish.
I mean, listen, my father made a career on that.
Abe Vigoda.
Right? Played Zorba the Greek.
Yeah. He did,
you know.
So did Zero. So he did what Zero Mostel did. Zero originated. Did he originate Tevye on Broadway?
He did, yes.
Okay. And then your dad took over right from him?
Luther Adler came on for a few months, but they were really preparing him for the tour. But so my father took over.
Was he ever in the show with Zero Mostel at the same time?
No. But they were in The Front together, the Woody Allen film.
Right.
Yeah.
Which was about blacklisted screenwriters in Hollywood, and Zero Mostel really lived it.
And so did my father. My father was blacklisted, yes.
Really?
Yes.
What was that experience like for him?
I think he ran away from the business for a while and got a ranch somewhere in Northern California and took part in the 60s a little bit and the hippie movement a little bit. And yeah, it was unbelievably a terrifying time. I do have to say that it doesn't seem like a lot of things have changed. I mean, it still seems like there's this this McCarthyism that's seeming to surge back into our society. And just, I'm really happy to be telling the story of Fiddler on the Roof now, because it really speaks to the human condition.
Mm-hmm.
It's about family. It's about really accepting a people that seem like outsiders.
You know, if the listener isn't intimately familiar with Fiddler on the Roof or hasn't seen it in a while, second act is just total downer.
Yes.
Most of the good songs are in the first act. I say good songs. I mean, they're great. Is Miracle of Miracles in the second act?
That's first act.
That's first. Yeah. My God.
Yeah.
Do You Love Me's in the second act.
That is in the second
act.
Yes.
Okay, there you go.
I knew that.
Anna Tefke is in the second act.
That's
but
right.
A big downer song.
Yes.
Which is, a great song. But it's a weirdly structured musical. Weird for a musical, not weird for the Jewish experience.
Right.
Because it just so embraces the reality of wherever the Jews are, they're kicked out of.
That's right.
And the Jews in the show more than accept it. Like, this is the way of the world. Right. And there's just an acknowledgement, an embracing as best they can of loss.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't see that anymore.
Right.
We don't see that in our society anymore. Mm. I was talking about this the other day. But this is where the framing device comes into play. I mean, how I interpreted it as it doesn't matter if it's Danny who is playing this modern Jewish person, mm-hmm. right? Possibly this secular Jew, no skull cap.
Right.
It doesn't matter if he really is a descendant of Tevye.
Mm-hmm.
It just matters he is a Jew today.
Sure.
And he's reading a book that probably is the stories of Shalom Aleichem.
Sure.
And he's just connecting to his past.
Right.
Is there a different interpretation? Is it supposed to be, Tevye's great-great-grandson? Is it important we think of it that way?
We've talked about it a lot. And I think ultimately it's for the audience member to decide. And we've performed it over 175 times now. And that moment hits me in different ways. Sometimes I do look at it as the progeny of Tevye. But then recently I've been looking at it and realizing that it could very well be the sole survivor genetically of the entire town of Anna Tefke.
That's what I was – so at the end of the play, they talk about the different places they're going to. And you're saying – or if you know a little bit about history, you're saying to yourself when Tevye and Goldie said, well, we're going to Chicago.
Right.
They'll live.
Mm-hmm.
And then when his daughter says, I think we're going to
– Warsaw.
Warsaw.
Yeah.
Well, they're going to die.
I mean,
because, I mean, the Nazis will be taking over within,
right.
15, 20 years of when this play takes place.
That's right.
So who knows if they made it to America. But as they're listing off equally plausible places to go, you're doing the accounting in your head. He's going to live. They're going to die.
All those question marks that are up in the air. I think what is beautiful and ultimately what Fiddler is really talking about is the survival of culture.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what's really inspiring to me, and also having my family legacy and basically having experienced a lot of loss when it comes to that never really knowing that legacy personally. But what survives is their creative output, their culture, the word, right? And that's something that Jews talk about all the time is that the Torah is the word,
yeah.
And it's the survival of the Torah. And we may be oppressed, we may be come close to annihilation, but as long as the word survives, it's incredibly inspiring.
It's really important. My great-granduncle is a guy named Shmerky Katsurginsky, who is one of the partisans of Vilnia, okay? Lithuania. And his job, he was the poet, and they would just smuggle out Torah scrolls. They would just smuggle out the word. They kind of reconstructed the library of the temple in a free place as best as they could. And it's really important.
That's right, because the truth is, loss and death, mm-hmm. it happens to all of us. I don't think that the Jews have like a monopoly on loss or anything like that. It just, you know, historically you can point back and see, okay, they were, you know, thrown out of here, they were thrown out of there, they were came close to annihilation here, and it's a culture that it was developed to survive those kinds of losses. And in a lot of ways, it's a blueprint. It's a roadmap for possibly other cultures, for anyone, really, and continuing to move on.
Yeah. And it's a play explicitly about the survival of a Jewish culture. And in so far as it's so popular, it represents the survival of the Jewish culture. It's not, that's not just its theme. That's what it's actually living. And every performance you do on Broadway extends that line.
I mean, it's...
Good job, Michael.
It's a lot of pressure. But I feel that, you know?
So you understudy for Tevye.
I do.
Have you played him on Broadway?
I on the stage, but not during a performance. I've had many rehearsals, you know, with a stellar Broadway cast. It's unbelievable.
Now, I have heard that sometimes what happens, especially during a long run, you can't screw over the audience, but maybe the star says to the guy who he knows is understudying for him and has put in all the time, maybe he says, you know, in a week or two, I might come down with a cold.
Right.
Have you heard stories like this?
You know, Danny is a machine.
Yeah.
I respect him so much. He puts his heart out there every single day, twice a day sometimes. He knows his body so well. Sometimes he'll be like, at the end of a show, he'll be like, I'm feeling a little bit of a tickle.
Yeah.
You know? But yeah, that you get maybe a day notice.
Uh-huh.
So... Or, you know, you hear horror stories of you show up to the theater and they're like, you're on.
Yeah. When you bring what you bring to Tevye,
sure.
Are you allowed to freelance a little bit on the bitty, 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 bitty bum part? How much is that written in this script? Because I've always heard, you know, I saw the movie and I heard bitty, 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 bum, but Danny, I mean, they're just syllables that maybe start with.
It is, you know, it's scatting, right?
Yeah, so it's, that's what I was, Jewish
that's what it is. It's like, you know, Billie Holiday or Duke Ellington, you know, they sound completely different. So it's up to the artist's interpretation.
I've only seen it once. Does he bitty differently?
You know what? I think he might mix it up a little bit here and there, but he's found such a good bitty bum, so why change it?
You know, if towards the end of the run, if there are financial troubles, if you're not filling the balcony, you could work in some product placement, you know, bitty bitty Capri Sun.
Capri Sun,
yeah,
right. Bun, some hot dog bun, I don't know,
bitty bitty
kosher
bitty
hot dog
Cinnabon. Exactly.
I'll pitch it as soon as possible.
Michael Bernardi Mortka, the innkeeper. A man who the fiddler runs through his veins. He's excellent in the show. If you're in New York and you have the opportunity to see it, I recommend it. Thank you so much. Great to meet you, Michael.
Oh, thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely.
All day long I bitty bitty bum. If I were a wealthy man, I wouldn't have to work hard. Yabba dibba 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 dum. If I were bitter, bitter rich, idle, diddle, diddle, diddle man.
And now the spiel. So I took a vacation for the last 3 days. Now, you could say I took a vacation for 5 or 6 days, if you include the weekend or the fact that I flew on Friday, but I know how you're scoring at home. Wait, what constitutes taking a vacation? For me, it's not talking into a microphone that day. And I found that I could find a way that I spent 3 days in a row, successive days, not talking into a microphone. So let me tell you about why we were taking this vacation. What gave me the opportunity not to talk into a microphone? Well, making her stage debut in over, I don't know, 60, 70 years of never being on stage before, having moved to a very nurturing senior retirement community, my mother-in-law, as Yenta, in the production of Fiddler on the Roof. We went down, we got dressed up, it was Florida. We wore nice shirts, they had buttons on them. We wore shorts, met my father-in-law at dinner before we went to see the show. They were nice shorts, they weren't basketball shorts, the kind of shorts you can iron. They weren't ironed, but you could iron them, is my point. And we were told, these were not the sort of shorts that boasts any sort of wicking technology. Nice shorts. And we were told, oh, by the way, the kids and I, it turns out, wear the same shorts, the same size shorts. And I only found this out because the kids went down there and they said, Dad, we have no nice shorts. So I had a few pair of nice shorts. And we spread the nice shorts around. It's amazing when legwear only needs to satisfy one dimension. So I have a child who is an inch taller than I am, but I have one who is my 15-year-old and he is quite a few inches shorter. But with shorts, it doesn't matter. I couldn't believe that he wore the same waist size. But here we are in the restaurant beforehand, wearing the very nice shorts, only to be told you can't wear shorts in the clubhouse. What clubhouse? I asked. We're going to see a show. Ah, yes. But the theater is the large room in the clubhouse of the community center. Hundreds of people go in. I always thought it was a theater, but it is a clubhouse. And because it is a theater in the clubhouse, it must adhere to the rules of the clubhouse, which is to say there are to be no shorts in the clubhouse. I don't know. To me, this clubhouse sounds kind of Mickey Mouse with its rules, but I understand. First, the gentleman shows his knees. This might usher in the collapse of good social order. We have rules in the clubhouse. I respect the rules. And why do I respect the rules? Must I respect the rules as a shorts, or as the kids would have it, non-shorts wearing American? Why? I will tell you why in a word. Tradition. So a compromise or a solution was made slash foisted upon us. We will quickly stop by the familial home and don sweatpants. Now, my father-in-law, who is the provider of the sweatpants, is quite a few inches shorter than I am. He is, about 5'8", I would say. I'm a little over 6 feet tall. And so my oldest son is a little over 6'1". He did not care at all. He put on whatever sweatpants were offered to him. My youngest son, the sweatpants fit. They were nice sweatpants. I mean, they were sweatpants, but they were very high-end for sweatpants. But there I was wearing a smaller man's sweatpants and feeling like a smaller man myself. I felt diminished. I felt wronged. I felt misunderstood. And I asked myself, why? Why these feelings? Why was I feeling so put out? Why was I feeling this humiliation? And it dawned on me. It was because not so much of the very short sweatpants I was made to wear, but it was because of my status. Who day and night must scramble for a living, feed his wife and children, do his daily pod, and who has the right as master of the house to have the final word at home? The papa. The papa. Tradition, and there I was in sweatpants. Great show. My mother-in-law really crushed it as Yenta. The audience was in stitches, and my ankles were getting most of the blood they needed. Maybe this is the tightness of the sweatpants talking, but she was fantastic. No, it wasn't. She was really good. And we got through that incident on our vacation. Then, of course, there was the further incident of the Airbnb that turned out mostly to be, I would describe it as a set for an Airbnb. If you were doing a sitcom or a not too well-funded movie and you wanted to shoot a scene in something that looked like an Airbnb, you might hire this place. I mean, there were closets, but you open them up. There were no rods in the closet. There was no dressers anywhere or a place to put any luggage or even one of those racks to put up your luggage. So they had a couch, was right there in the pictures, but in real life it turned out to have been a miniature couch. Looks like three sections. I mean, they were sectionated, but you know, someone who needs a medium to large size sweatpants could not comfortably fit on the couch. And it was a roof over your head, but unfortunately that roof was also the floor of the neighbors above who were into bocce, apparently. So there was that incident, the changing of the Airbnb mid-trip incident. There was the incident of the tippled over jet ski. Turns out when you bank ride on a jet ski, you have to take into account the following factors: speed, weight of the participants on the jet ski, wind shear, and driver idiocy. That is all on me. I apologize to any and all members of the staff, special projects coordinators who might have found themselves in large bodies of water. And then, of course, there was the incident of the ordering for the table. Not at the table, but when you order for the table. I mean, a restaurant might give a vibe, or even not a vibe. They might explicitly state this restaurant, we have small plates, which is never good. You think, okay, I mean, well, I mean, of course, the circumference of a plate, that is not standard in the dining industry. But no, small plates mean something else. It means we share or do shared. We do a shared steamed bun. We do a shared pad thai. They might do the shared pad thai, but that doesn't mean everyone at the table wants to do the shared pad thai, the shared steamed bun. What they probably should say is you will need several steamed buns if you have several people. But no matter how much canvassing of the table is done and no matter how much input is received, there are some situations where ordering for the table, perhaps the table is happy, but not everyone sitting around the table is. I don't know. Maybe it is that when one family way of doing things, say the Pesca's, abuts another family's way of doing things. I don't know. One family would consider it initiative taken. The other family might consider it less of an assistance, more of an imposition. Anyway, one family does it, the other one doesn't. Why? In a word. And then there was the incident of the lad who took a walk on the beach and didn't return for quite a while. Search parties were sent. Explanations were given. Statements like, why would I take my cell phone? I'm going to swim in an ocean. But without your cell phone, we didn't know where you were for over an hour. This on the heels of, I don't know why I didn't pack a bathing suit. I guess I didn't think of it. And the, can we just buy flip-flops there? Mine don't fit me anyway.
At 3, I started Hebrew school. At 10, I learned a trade. I hear they picked a bride for me. I hope she's pretty.
The sun, the sun's tradition, and perhaps the vacation, including the many, many incidents, and the change of venue, and the late-breaking dress code, and I didn't mention human hairs found not only in the towel, the prop towel of the set Airbnb, but also a different and longer human hair in the gelato shop, which I have come to believe is haunted. I could give you the address if you're interested. A haunted gelato shop. Perhaps it was something less of a vacation and more of a managing of constituencies to some of the key participants slash leaders of the vacation, making me wonder who must find a way to make the kids on time, the dad on time, and her on time, and who must get to the airport, restaurant, and show on time, only to have Papa tip the jet ski over. The mama! I guess you can say there was a consistency to this vacation. Also true, this is true, my youngest son got the COVID bug, and that will pass. What won't pass is my mother-in-law got the acting bug. She was quite good, and she is right now considering very strongly auditioning for next year's show, turning this into a vacation tradition. So we have that to look forward to. And if you set your calendars, maybe you could tell when I do some pre-tape shows and hopefully don't get the intros too screwed up.
There's a fiddler on the roof!
That's it for today's show. The Gist is produced by Corey Wara. The senior producer is Joel Patterson. Michelle Pesca is CLO of Peachfish Productions. The Gist is presented in collaboration with Libsyn's AdvertiseCast. For advertising inquiries, go to advertisecast.com/thegist. Umpru, gpru, dupru, and thanks for listening.